Battle of Valcor Island. Friday morning, October 11th, 1776, the winds had turned around. For the past 3 days, kicking up relentlessly from the south, they had kept the British ships bottled up in the north end of Lake Champlain. Finally, this morning, a steady breeze freshening from the north freed Guy Carleton's forces to move out onto the lake, propelling them south toward their intended target, Fort Ticonderoga. Benedict Arnold's rebel fleet, such as it was, lay several miles south, hidden behind Valcor Island in the channel between the island and the western shore of Lake Champlain. Outmanned and outgunned, Arnold knew he lacked the firepower to confront the British on open waters. Faced with armed superiority on vessels manned by 700 veteran British sailors against his largely inexperienced crews, and determined to exploit whatever advantages he could find or create, Arnold hoped to draw the enemy into waters and conditions of his choosing. As the British vessels passed the southern tip of Valcor Island, Arnold sent out the schooner Royal Savage and three rogue galleys as bait. Captain Thomas Pringle, Commodore of the British fleet, bit. Wheeling upwind in pursuit of the Americans, the British vessels chased the American vessels back into the narrow waters separating Valcor Island from the shoreline, at which point Arnold's resourcefulness became evident. Although the Royal Savage ran aground, to be overrun and later torched, the rogue galleys returned to take their places in the American line of battle. Lacking sufficient room to tack effectively into the wind, the large and powerful British ships found themselves stranded outside the arena, unable to bring their guns to bear, reduced to sniping ineffectively from afar. Within the battle zone, however, the artillery exchanges were intense. For several hours, British gunboats, arrayed in a crescent, pounded the American ships with a continuous bombardment. The Americans fought back gamely. A direct hit on one gunboat's powder magazine ignited a tremendous explosion. When the schooner Carleton, the only one of the larger British ships to join battle, finally worked into range early afternoon, it became the focus of the American gunners. With the Carleton's commanding officer and second in command both badly wounded, with half the crew dead and wounded, with the hold filling with water, and with sails in a shamble, a 19-year-old midshipman, Edward Pellew, clambered out onto the bowsprit in the face of scathing enemy fire to manhandle the disabled jib into position, to enable the ship to turn and escape with the help of tow lines from neighboring vessels. Pellew would go on to become one of Britain's most celebrated naval heroes during the Napoleonic Wars. With the sun lowering in the west and both sides exhausted, the British pulled back, planning on resuming the assault the next morning. In addition to the Royal Savage, Arnold's former flagship, the American losses included the gondola Philadelphia, casualties totaling about 60, remaining ships battered and badly mauled, and severely depleted stores of ammunition. American prospects looked bleak. It was a grim gathering that met aboard the Congress that evening. In light of their dire prospects for the next day, flight seemed the only reasonable option. After considering his limited choices, Arnold decided to take advantage of dense fog and a gap in the British line along the lake shore. After darkness had fallen, the American vessels, with oars muffled, slipped past the slumbering British fleet in single file, one after another, each led by the dim light of the veiled stern lanterns of the preceding craft. Daybreak found the Americans several miles south of Valcor Island. Waking to the unwelcome discovery of the improbable escape of the American ships, Carleton ordered the British squadron to the chase. Capricious winds hampered hunter and hunted. By the second morning, crippled, fatigued, and with some taking on water, a number of Arnold's ships found it impossible to keep up and fell off the pace, one by one falling prey to their British pursuers. As the day progressed, the American Congress and four other ships fought a delaying action, eventually retreating to Ferris Bay, where Arnold set them ablaze, escaping on foot with 200 men to arrive at Crown Point. There, he was met by those of his fleet who managed to escape. Convinced Colonel Thomas Hartley, commander of the fort, that his exposed position was untenable, burned the fort structures, and pulled back to Ticonderoga to await what was expected to be a British assault, an attack that did not materialize. With winter in the offing, and with some 13,000 American soldiers at Ticonderoga, and having experienced the obstinate defiance exemplified in the leadership of Benedict Arnold, Carleton withdrew his forces into winter quarters in Canada. The British victory at the Battle of Valcour Island is beyond dispute. The effective destruction of the American fleet ceded control of the lake to the British Navy, laying the groundwork for the Burgoyne Campaign of 1777. Given Thomas Pringle's overwhelming material advantage, however, the victory was not the tactical success it should have been, nor was it even a strategic victory in the larger sense. Tactically, two critical errors by Pringle enabled Benedict Arnold to mount a spirited defense. By failing to determine Arnold's position before sailing up the lake, he allowed Arnold to dictate the physical parameters of the fighting, thereby neutralizing the biggest guns in the British arsenal and allowing Arnold's forces to survive the initial onslaught. Moreover, his failure to seal off the exit at the southern end of Valcour Island provided Arnold with an escape route he was only too willing to exploit. So both of these errors prevented Pringle, later to be rewarded with promotion to admiral, from bottling up Arnold's ships in the narrow confines of the channel at Valcour Island. Of even greater significance strategically, perhaps, was the ultimate gift of time granted the American Revolutionary forces by the tenacity of Benedict Arnold's defense throughout the 1776 naval campaign on Lake Champlain. By compelling Carleton to engage in a naval construction race over the course of the summer, and by impeding his otherwise unchallenged expedition up the lake in the fall, Arnold delayed Carleton's assault on Fort Ticonderoga until the following summer, granting the fledgling American forces a year in which to prepare for what would be a definitive victory over General Burgoyne at Saratoga.